Culture builds upon the past, but that doesn't mean artists sometimes can't innovate something new and exciting. For fans of drag, Jackie Beat is a pioneer. For her beat poet sensibilities, her biting humor, and her extreme eye makeup that's inspired thousands of queens around the world.
As Jackie Beat sang with Alaska in the album Pound Cake, if there's something you love about drag queens, Jackie Beat invented that. Today, the self-proclaimed world's biggest bitch, Jackie Beat, joins us from her chateau in California to weigh in on Heklina's marathon roast. Who knew there was so much shade to throw her way?
Reinventing the Golden Girls and Who's the Boss live with Danny Pintaro.
And her strained relationship with Roseanne Barr and how the reboot of Roseanne's TV sitcom reimagines Rosie as a Trump supporter.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Before we begin, let's listen to Jackie Beat and Alaska singing I Invented That.
I invented that. I invented that.
But what about Divine?
Bitch stole from me all the time.
What about Lady Bunny?
That man's not even funny.
What about Dame Edna?
I'm gonna ignore what you just said, Na.
What about RuPaul?
Let me ask my lawyer. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Ask me again.
What about RuPaul?
I have no problem with her at all.
Girl,
take it easy.
Hello?
Is this Miss Jackie Beat?
Are we on the air?
We are. This is Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun.
No, I just want to, I don't know whether it's like pre-air, on air. I need to act nice if I'm on the air.
You can be as rude as you want to.
We don't care.
I'm kidding. I know that's what people want from Jackie Beat. I still don't get it.
Do you feel like people expect you to be nice to them or rude to them?
Well, I have done shows in the past where afterwards people have come up and complained, like, you were too nice. Why weren't you mean? When that person said that thing to you, or when they yelled out, how come you didn't strangle them? And it's like, well, I guess she's getting old.
I'm tired of fighting everyone.
I'm very nice in my real life. So, I mean, there's some people who would probably.
Last time we had you on the show, you were about to have a double hip replacement surgery.
Yeah, I got to be honest. That was before the hip replacement, I was in constant fucking pain. So that kind of exhausts you and makes you very edgy and touchy. And yeah, mm-hmm. But everything's great now.
You're doing squats and stuff and lifting up cars with your new hips.
Yeah, I love exercise.
You're like allergic to sweating.
Put these hips to use.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we just did the Heklina roast, which lasted over 3 hours. And I was kind of forced to accept something that I never knew about myself. Turns out I'm fat.
Oh, was that part of the roast, huh?
Oh, my God. I was like, which one are we roasting up here?
Now, 3.5, almost 4 hours long for a roast seems like an awful lot of time. Like, well, did you guys have to take breaks for every time, like, Peaches passed gas because it made so much noise? Or, I mean, why would it take so much time?
Well, because even if you've done drag for close to 30 years, people never fucking learn that the number one rule is leave them wanting more. Mm. And, you know, they just think you got to give people a long I don't know. It just, everybody just went too long and there was like, you know, special guests and things in between. And anyway, live and learn. And when and if we do one. For me, it's going to be a lot shorter.
Because people love you. There's nothing rude to say about you.
Exactly. Heklina's roast was the Puerto Rican dick of roast, and mine's going to be the Japanese one. Nice and short, cute, nothing wrong with it.
Tight.
Nothing wrong with it, but just, short, cute.
What were some of the highlights for the roast for you? What are some of the things that you really laughed at?
Oh, my God. Seriously, that's the thing. You can say anything as long as it's funny. There was some parts that kind of fell flat. Like, really? Is that a joke? No, like, that kind of hurt. Like, you know, like, I don't know, just Peaches did this whole thing about how, you know, I used to write for Joan Rivers, and then I ended up suing her, and, you know, and then Roseanne, and then I threw, you know, like, read her to filth online because she's into Trump and how I'm not a very good friend. And I was like, okay, is this a joke? A bunch of people sued Joan Rivers. I still love her and I still love Roseanne, but that's a deal breaker. I'm sorry. I'm not going to put up with supporting Trump if you claim to be, you know, a feminist and, you know, for gay rights and all that. Anyway, so, but the ones that stuck out were, I remember Animatronic said that since I was hosting, I was a little nervous and that I had butterflies in all four of my stomachs. that was a good one.
Oh, wow.
And Alaska had a lot of really fucking funny ones, but it was like she went last, so by then I was practically in a coma. The funny part is when I was saying this to somebody else, when somebody reads you on filth on stage and it's a joke that you actually wrote for them to tell about you, and you have to pretend like you're hearing it for the first time. But yeah, it was fun. And, you know, Julie Brown is so sweet and it's so not her cup of tea. And I made a joke that she confided in me backstage that she doesn't have any AIDS jokes. And I said, well, you may not have any AIDS jokes, but after spending, you know, sharing a dressing room with all of us, you probably have AIDS. There was a lot of really funny stuff, yeah.
Well, you've famously written for Joan Rivers, Elvira's show, Roseanne, and many major drag queens for decades. How do people work with you to write material? Like, if someone turns to you and says, Jackie, my show sucks, I need you to help me, how does that process work?
It's different every time. First of all, you know, they have the haters roast right now, and... Yeah. I don't begrudge anybody, you know, Bianca jokingly says, I want to be a fucking ballet dancer, but I'm not. So I don't, you know, book ballet shows. And, you know, but these queens book these tours of roasts and they can barely put a sentence together. And I'm not even being a cunt. Can I say cunt?
Yeah, yeah. I sure can.
Cunt, cunt, cunt. I can say it in six different languages, honey. My point is these queens come to me because... You know, it's kind of old school and, you know, it's not as easy as you think writing a joke. You know, I write for a lot of these young drag race queens who are touring with the haters roast.
I feel like every time I see a show and the jokes bomb, I want to give the drag queen your business card. You know, and
well,
I'm just
it could have been one of my jokes. Alaska was joking. We went to lunch right after the roast the next day in San Francisco, and she was like, don't buy a used joke from Jackie Beat. I got a clunker. Anyway, like it's a used car. Oh, but to return to your, like, how does it work? It's different with everyone. Like with Elvira, the first time I worked with her, it was a pre-existing show, and it just kind of struck her that it just wasn't funny. She didn't write it. Somebody else wrote it. And there was two or three song parodies in it, but they weren't... I mean, there wasn't one joke in the song parodies. It's like, okay, you changed the words, and you sort of made it, you know, Elvira adjacent, but there's no jokes. So sometimes I'll just take a pre-existing thing and rewrite it or just sprinkle it with jokes, and sometimes it's just, will you write me... 5 or 6 jokes about each of these people. That's kind of like the roast thing. So it's different with everybody. I mean, working with Joan, as much as I love her and as much as I learned, and, you know, it was like a joke sweatshop. Mm-hmm. It was like, you're being locked in this room and you are going to write jokes and she's going to want more. And,
Are you busy when a queen gets on Drag Race? Do they call you up and you're like, hustling for a week trying to develop material for them?
It doesn't really work that way.
Because I'm surprised. You know you're going to be on All Stars, or you know you're going to be having to read Drag Queens of Filth on that show. And here's Jackie Beat She's, you know,
a professional.
A professional. You know she exists. You have her fucking contact phone number. I mean, I'd like to think that you're just like having to say no to a lot of people, but I, from knowing them personally, I'm like, why didn't you call Jackie Beat? 1-800 funny jokes, you know, .com or something. It's just, to me, I'm like wondering, is this just an issue that people don't understand how comedy works, or is it a situation? Yeah. I mean, maybe they just think that they have to come up with all those ideas on their own.
I think first of all, before you're on the show, you're not really making great money as a drag queen as a general rule. I mean, the difference between, you know, Aja before Drag Race and Aja after, you know, then you can start paying for, like, now I'm going to get my costumes made. Now I'm going to get lace front wigs from blah, blah, blah. I'm going to wear the best makeup. I'm going to pay somebody to write me some jokes. But before you're on the show, you don't even think of that. And Rue's the only one that gets to sit there with an earpiece and have all her jokes fed to her, which is, I'm not even reading her for that. That's the way it works. I've worked with Ross Matthews, you know, where he's doing the on the street thing, and you've got an earpiece, and it's not because he can't think of funny things. It's that he's done it 200 times, and, you know, you want another set of eyes saying, you know, what about this? And
I don't do anybody's
job for them. Like, you know, Joan Rivers could have done it, but it's the reason she was at the top of her game in her early 80s is because she knew that she needed jokes, and she was willing to, you know, she didn't pay great, but she paid for it. And I don't know if I'm making any sense.
No, but most comedians do hire writers. It's not like an uncommon thing. Yeah. Even if you see like a Netflix special and you see that, like, you're like the Dave, you know, Dave Chappelle show or the Chris Rock show, like written by Chris Rock, like it's his name on there, but he probably, some of those jokes were written by other people. He's contracted them out.
I do my own makeup, but if I had Rue's money, would I sit in a chair and have somebody do my makeup? Of course I fucking would.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, you know, I can't afford to travel with somebody. And, you know, I can't do hair. I can't sew.
So you'd be early eliminated on Drag Race.
Oh, my. Are you kidding? I'd be eliminated in the first 20 minutes for telling Rue to go fuck herself. I'd be like, how dare you read me to filth about my hair and my outfit and my makeup when you haven't done any of your own for 20 years.
It's funny that you get that reaction, because it's like, well, there was this drag queen we used to work out at the gym with. He goes, I want to get on RuPaul's Drag Race so I can get eliminated first. So when I get eliminated, I can just walk up and punch Rue in the face. And like, he was serious. I'm just like, why would you feel that passionate about this TV show that you'd want to get on it, make all this effort just to punch her in the face? And I'm like, yeah, you've got some problems, dude.
I don't want to punch anybody in the face.
Well, I mean, you did this great song with Alaska called I Invented That. And the song kind of begins talking about your pioneering work in makeup. And in the middle, you know, you talk about RuPaul and you say, let me ask my lawyer. I have no problem with RuPaul.
Yeah.
But you've also talked in other interviews that you pitched to Logo the concept of Drag Race. It was called Drag Race. And later on, they decided to go with RuPaul for that project.
Well, let me first of all say that the biggest joke in that is that I have a lawyer. I'm not even big enough to have a look. No, and listen, I've said this a lot. I honestly, it was so long ago. If I was 100% certain that I pitched that show, that we pitched it because it was me and Kate Flannery, you know, who was on The Office. It was me and Kate Flannery because we were in Valley of the Dolls together in New York. And she's like the ultimate fag hag and I'm a drag queen. So we came up with this idea and we registered it at the Writers Guild. But I want to make it 100% clear. I honestly don't remember who we pitched it to and who we didn't. And it was a few years later. And I was like, kind of like, you know, if you're going to do a reality competition series about drag, like Drag Race isn't the hardest name to come up with. So if I thought that I had been completely ripped off and stolen from, I would have sued. But I'm not that person if it's not, you know, the actual case.
Mm-hmm.
And am I bitter? Oh my God, yes.
But you were bitter before, right? God.
You were bitter before Drag Race. Just anybody who wants to listen to our interview with Jackie B, okay, showed up here in the home studio, dressed up in a Santa Claus outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And you kept on looking at this crystal skull puppet that we had. And you kept saying, I'll name your price. I'm going to buy it from you. And I said, Jackie, it's not for sale. It's a puppet that I used to use in my drag act. And it's something very meaningful to me. You know,
yeah. You're like, I don't care. I want it.
And I'll say, I'll make you one. And you were like, no, I want that one.
And you know what? Here's the lesson. I'm so glad I didn't fucking buy it because it would probably be in a drawer right now. Seriously.
So later on, we were doing a podcast with Selena Luna from the Coco movie, the Disney Pixar animation.
Right. Uh-huh.
And Nadia Ginsberg. And we told them about that story about how you were obsessed with our crystal skull. You were like the villainess in the Indiana Jones movie. You were obsessed mm-hmm. with the crystal skull.
Yeah, Cruella de Vil and those puppies.
Yeah. And I told them, I said, well, later on when we got back from the gig, someone had broken into our home and the skull was stolen. And both of them, without skipping a beat, said, Jackie didn't do it.
At the same time, see? Jackie wouldn't do that. We just started yeah. laughing. We were like, no, we know.
Yeah, I'm a lot of talk, and I would never do anything like that.
But this
and Crystal Skull, I just mm-hmm. want to go on record and say Crystal Skull is also, you know, like what you get if you don't clean up your act, like... Like Alaska finally did. I mean, there's thin, and then there's, you know, like, girl. Can I just go backtrack just yeah. a little? I want to say one thing once mm-hmm. and for fucking all, because okay. there are 14-year-olds out there. 14-year-olds. 14-year-old straight girls telling me, don't be bitter, be better. It's like, go fuck yourself. But that's not what I wanted to say. I want to go on record
okay.
and say that I appreciate RuPaul. I respect RuPaul. I watch the show. Sometimes it's better than other times. You know, it's hit and miss. Like this fucking Snatch Game, this last Snatch Game was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, other than maybe, you know, Ben de la Creme as Paul Lynde. But I like the show. I appreciate it. I love RuPaul. But listen, this is what I do. I make fun of people. The bitterness is partially real. But listen, I'm sitting here doing this interview in a giant house. I have no fucking, you know, it's all white lady problems. So I don't hate anybody. And people are just like, God, that's so bitter. It's like, yeah, bought me a house, cunt.
Where are you hanging out with 14-year-old girls that are able to tell you this in the first place?
It's online, first okay. of all.
You're not like hanging out at Hot Topic at the mall.
I'm just doing some laundry. Do you want some sweet tea? You know that... To Catch a Predator. Anyway.
Well, a lot of these young kids don't realize that Sherry Vine's been doing drag for 26 years now. You've been yeah. doing it since cavemen were painting on walls.
1989.
And I think RuPaul started dressing up in drag around
1980s, right?
1986, yeah. 87. So not that
I don't know.
Shortly beforehand.
I just thought of a joke.
What was it?
What do cavemen and Jackie Beat have in common?
What?
They both know how to paint a woolly mammoth. Something like that, like a cave drawing. Anyway, sometimes a joke needs work.
Yeah.
On a wall.
Somebody told the joke. Oh my God, what was it? Why does Kevin Spacey love Jackie Beat's act? Because all her material is 13 years old.
Oh.
That was pretty God. Good.
I'm fascinated that Kevin Spacey's career just ended like that in a second. You know, we've all known what an awful person Kevin Spacey is for years. And it took the guy from Rent.
Yeah, I heard years ago. I heard somebody say, you know, Kevin Spacey was just finally officially blacklisted, you know, or 86th or whatever you call it, from Burke Williams, the fancy spa, because he just, you know, he'd go get a massage and he'd literally be grabbing at the guy's crotches and like, hello, no.
John Travolta calls that a reverse massage.
Yes, yes. It's like reverse racism. It makes no fucking sense.
But you and Sherry Vine share this history together, and you're both coming to Chicago on March 3rd at Hamburger Mary's to do your show. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, Battle of the Bitches. Well, at this point of our careers, it's all about sort of repackaging yourself. What we decided to do was do this show called Battle of the Bitches, where we, you know, we sing a song together, we close the show with a duet, and then in between, we pick topics, you know, out of a hat, and we go, you know, parody to parody, you know, drugs, cock, you know, politics. And it's really fun. And, you know, we do new material, but we also do some of our classics. And occasionally we'll do the same song and she'll do the first half and then I'll do the second half just to show, like, you know, her parody is about, you know, drugs and my parody is about cock or something. And it's the same exact song, like, you know, Mamma Mia or something.
So it's about so it's a bit of a competition. So people are like being like, who's doing this song better than the other person?
Yeah, I mean, the competition part, to be perfectly fair, I hate to, you know, give you guys a glimpse of the back of the Hollywood sign. I hate to ruin the illusion, but yeah, it's all...
Is it like wrestling?
The structure is like a contest, but it's really just, you know, a show. Yeah, it's exactly, it's like pro wrestling.
A lot of people have committed suicide off of that Hollywood sign.
Yes. Peg Entwistle is one of the most famous. She was the first person to jump, and I think it was back when it was still the Hollywood Land sign, because, you know, it used to say Hollywood Land.
Mm-hmm. It was a real estate company.
And this isn't because I know a lot. It's because I was here at the time. That's how old I am.
But they don't allow people to get close to the sign because they're worried people are going to commit suicide.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, 10 minutes in Hollywood and it'll do it.
But you sort of managed to survive. I mean, you certainly got your start in New York City, and it's well documented in Wigstock, the film. But, you know, you're really, when people think about Jackie Beat, they think of Los Angeles more than New York at this point.
Well, I started in L.A. You know, I grew up in Arizona and I moved to L.A. in the 80s. Oh, my God. Fucking Los Angeles in the 80s was out of control. It was like all the music was amazing and it was all about K-Rock and Melrose. And it was just so amazing. Especially for, you know, if you were a creative person. And then, you know, I ended up going to New York to do Valley of the Dolls. And I was really nervous. And I ended up staying for almost 5 years because New York always scared the hell out of me. And then I came back, you know, to write for some TV show, the TV show that I met Nadia on. And so I'm more of a Los Angeles person. I never really loved New York. It's a young person's town. You need tons of money. And also the city I miss doesn't exist anymore. I feel like Sarah Jessica Parker, you know, ruined New York.
She ruined cupcakes. She ruined a lot of things.
How did Sex and the City ruin New York?
Well, all those fucking annoying girls you know, moved to New York to get away from now live there. There's not a single affordable area to live in. The Meatpacking District, every place, the East Village, every place that used to be, you know, Times Square, you used to be able to, like, you know, at least get a rat's nest little shoebox of an apartment. And now everything's condos and expensive. And yeah, it's
like, you know, those mean girls in high school that we tended to avoid. Yeah. Now we're grown up. And they're fans of Drag Race, and now we have to deal with those little mean girls again.
Yeah.
Saying horrible things about us.
Exactly. No one loves women more than me. I love women. All my best friends are women. All my inspirations, my favorite singers, my favorite comedians, they're all women. I love women. But it's like there's certain women that just, you know, anyway.
Well, no one does bullying better than a disenfranchised person. Because we understand what it feels like to be hurt. And so when they're going to attack us, they really know where our jugular is, where to go to make us feel bad about ourselves.
I just don't like to be treated like, you know, a fucking rent-a-clown. and you're smashed and you have absolutely no idea, you know, you don't know the rules about touching. And do you know what I mean? It's like, that's why it used to bother me. I would work at Hamburger Mary's and it would be all these straight women celebrating, you know, having, what do you call it, bachelorette parties. And this was before gay people could get married. And I would be like, how many, you know, how many bachelorettes are here? Woo! And I would be like, now, can I just ask a question? Like, when you were trying to figure out where to do it, was your attitude like, hey, I have a great idea. Let's go do it at the gay bar or the drag show. You know, that place that's full of people who can't fucking get married. You know, it's like, anyway.
It's like having a fundraiser to feed the homeless, but, you know, doing it at Whole Foods or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a KKK rally at the fucking, you know, oh my God. What's the fucking most famous black theater in the world? The Apollo.
The Apollo.
She's getting old, people. She's getting old.
Well, you yourself call yourself the Thomas Edison of drag because you invented it.
Well, let me tell you that song. What happened with that song? Alaska called me and she's like, I'm recording a new album and I'm doing a song later today and I need somebody who can really sing. There's this one part where I need you to just like belt out this note. And I was like, sure, of course, I would love to do it. So Mario, my best friend Mario and I went to lunch and then we went to the recording studio out in, you know, a Valley Village. It's like in, you know, this recording studio at some guy's house in the middle of nowhere. It's where all the drag queens record. And she was like, oh, Alyssa Edwards was supposed to record this song with me today and she can't make it. You know, do you want to try to do something with it? So they played me the track and I literally wrote it in 10 minutes and we just recorded it and the rest is history.
Or herstory, but what was the original track supposed to be? Because it's certainly, I mean, Alyssa Edwards didn't invent anything.
Oh, that, no, I just came up with that. I was like, here are a few titles that I've been thinking about. I invented that, but I'm not bitter. Like, you know, I had all these ideas. No, I came up with the title, you know. And
so the music was already done, so you just wrote the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Girl, if I got some money, I'm hiring you. Because I got to say, like, Alaska's music is some of the strongest collaborations, and certainly your song with her is one of the best songs in Pound Cake.
I love her music. I love her. I really do. We have become really good friends, and I just think she is a magical creature, and I think she's an amazing performer, and I can't take my eyes off of her, and her drag is great, and she's funny, and she's smart. And then she's also like the sweetest person and we really get along. So there's some people that, you know, you want to like and you kind of like, is there a connection here? But yeah, no, I really love Alaska.
Well, you know, Alaska is very intelligent and values her own history and puts a lot of money into her own community. Whereas I feel like other drag artists aren't as wise and as, you know, I don't want to use the word respectful, but they're just curious about someone like you, you know? And so she reaches out to you. She reaches out to us, you know, and says, I really value your history and your experience and your wisdom. And I want to be part of that. And in some ways, that's why she's so wise and intelligent.
Mm-hmm. And some people feel threatened by that stuff, you know?
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. But there's a big part. That's a big part of it. And I'm not joking. When we go to lunch or I hang out with her and her boyfriend, they know my lyrics better than I do. They'll say something and I'll be like, what is that from? And they'll be like, that song you did 20 years ago. Anyway, so she's a fan of mine. Yeah, yes, exactly. So she, I like people who can be bitchy and catty and throw shade, but at the end of the day are just fucking normal, nice people. And ultimately she's nice. And that's what I like.
Just like Coco Peru.
This interview is over. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Old one wig.
I want to hear about Who Is the Boss Live. How did you rope Danny Pintaro into doing this?
Well, he's an old friend of ours. You know, he knows me and Mario, and he's got a great sense of humor about it. And so we've always wanted to do it, but we've been doing the Golden Girls so much that I just thought it's time for a little break. And I wanted to include Mario because there's never any, you know, there's not many parts that are very fun for special guests with the Golden Girls. Mm. You know, Alaska just did Frida Claxton and Barbara Thorndike. But like for, you know, I like to work with Mario. And so we thought he could play Tony Danza and I could play Judith Light. And now Nadia's going to play Samantha, the Alyssa Milano part. Sherry's going to play Mona, which is the Catherine Hellman part. She's going to be the sexy granny. And then, yeah, Danny Pintaro is going to play himself. And unlike the Golden Girls, you know, with a bowl cut wig and be totally queenie. Mm-hmm. But unlike the Golden Girls, which are really well written, and I'm not putting down Who's the Boss, but it's just not quite as sophisticated, obviously, as it's a true situation comedy. The joke is what's happening, not like the funny lines, really. Mm. So we're going to completely rewrite it. So it's just inspired by. So if anyone's thinking of suing us, go fuck yourself.
Because the Golden Girls ones, you guys don't really touch the script. It's just the TV show.
We've started to just add a few little things because at first that was sort of verboten. We were like, don't change it. But, you know, if something funny comes up and, you know. But, yeah, we generally do the scripts as written. But this one we're going to completely rewrite and make it crazy and funny.
I didn't realize that Golden Girls is gospel. Like, that can't be messed with.
Well, people are pretty passionate. You know, Alaska, I keep bringing up Alaska. Jesus Christ. Alaska does a show called On Golden Girls, and she plays all four of them, and I loved it. I went with Mario, who's not a Golden Girls fan. I mean, I think he can appreciate it, but he didn't grow up watching it. He doesn't know every line. You know, he's kind of like, shut up. And he totally enjoyed it, too. But for people like me who are the hardcore fans, I mean, it was just so packed with inside jokes and, you know, I loved it. So I decided that Sherry Vine and I should do, again, this is all about repackaging and rebranding. I want to do a show called The Substitute Teacher and the Slut. So it's me as Dorothy's Bornak and her as Blanche Devereaux. And it's just a cabaret show where we're singing and, you know, doing little scenes and stuff like that. So. So look for that, kids.
Roseanne is getting a reboot. It's coming out in March.
Well, she got the boot from me. Yeah. Just kidding.
Well, it's making a lot of headlines because in this reincarnation, Roseanne is a Trump supporter.
Yes. And in real life.
And in real life, she's a Trump supporter. She did have a reality TV show called Roseanne's Gone Nuts.
It's just called Roseanne's Nuts.
Roseanne's because, Nuts, yeah.
Yes, it was a little double entendre because she, you know, had a macadamia nut farm, and she's also crazy.
Well, you've been friends with her for a long time. Does this come as a surprise to you?
Oh, totally. That's what the reason she blocked me on, you know, social media is because I tweeted that I still think I'm being, you know, punked. That I just, it does not compute. If, you know, it's like the person I know. Listen, I adore Roseanne. I think she's funny. And I remember when I was opening for her at the New York, New York in Las Vegas for a 7-week run. And during that time, it is it Rosh Hashanah? Anyway, she had a Seder at the Four Seasons and she invited everybody, friends and family. And Mario was in town and he was invited. And she rewrote the whole thing to be inclusive. And she said, the Jews are not the only people, you know, that this is about. It's about anyone who's been marginalized or abused. It's about people of color. It's about, you know, gays, lesbians, you know. So I just was, that's the kind of person that she is or was to me. And now I just feel like, you know, she's kind of a punk rocker from way back, a hippie, equal parts hippie and punk rocker. And she's a fighter. and a feminist and a this and a that and everything that I think I am and that I appreciate and value. And I feel like what has happened is that, and again, I don't know how anything really works. I don't think any of us do. I think the whole two-party system is to make it seem like we have a choice and everybody is probably in it for themselves and evil and all of that. But I just feel like she thinks maybe, I don't even know how to explain it, just that like, that it's all an illusion and that if there's a way to completely fuck up the system and throw a wrench in it, that's what it needs. And that's what Trump is and was. But my whole thing is, you know, if you voted for Trump, I kind of understand because you wanted change. But if you still support him after everything he's done and not done, fuck you.
Mm. I liked your tweet where you said Donald Trump will go down history as the worst president ever. His name will be forever be synonymous with failure, shame, idiocy, and greed. And that's what keeps you going.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
He's so egotistical, and he only took this job because, I mean, look at the way he treats the world. If you're a loser, he completely dumps you. He supports you and like tweets about you. And then if you lose the election, then he writes one saying, I knew he wasn't going to win. I tried, but even my stamp of approval couldn't help this loser. You know, he would throw his own kids under the bus, and mark my words, he will.
Mm.
Certainly with Mueller's investigation coming forward, there's no way Trump isn't going to be desperate.
Yeah, and the way it's set up, listen, I was a little kid in the 60s. This is how fucking old I am. I was a teenager in the 70s. I was a young adult in the 80s. I've seen a lot of bad presidents. I've seen a lot of shit. I've seen a lot of like, oh my God, is this the end of the world? You know, between AIDS and 9/11 and Vietnam, and I'm just saying like, it's always like, oh my God, I've never felt more... This is the worst I've ever felt because they have it set up where people don't even know what the truth is and what reality is. When you can dismiss anything that you don't like as fake news and a bunch of people out there just go, oh yeah, yep, the news industry is completely corrupt and, you know, and even like the FBI and the CIA, listen, I'm not saying they're perfect, but when the president says the FBI is corrupt, and then how can you even, you know, have checks and balances and make sure that, you know, these monsters are taken care of?
Well, isn't kind of Roseanne Barr and RuPaul have a lot in common is that they're millionaire punks, anarchists. And they just kind of want to see the system kind of explode from within.
Well, as far as I know, RuPaul is not a Trump supporter.
He's not a Trump supporter, but I'm talking about like the choices that RuPaul makes sometimes does make me feel like he's fucking with our heads, you know? And in a lot of ways, he said
this. You mean
this
casting choices?
Yeah, casting choices and just the development. And the impact of RuPaul's Drag Race is that he's really fascinated in the process of people who have absolutely no talent becoming superstars.
Isn't that his life story? Just kidding, everyone.
but I'm really fascinated by this idea because he's like Roseanne, RuPaul, both of them have this ability to have a lot of influence on the world as TV show hosts and creators. And I'm really curious to see what the impact Roseanne's TV show is going to happen because it's premiering as Mueller is indicting these Russians and the Trump administration and possibly even Donald Trump himself.
Yeah. Well, listen, first of all, we live in a world now where people will watch a show or not watch a show or buy a product or not buy a product just to make a point. I mean, when people boycott or try to make the movie Black Panther get a low rating on Rotten Tomatoes because they're fucking racist. I mean, that's just sick. It's like, get a fucking life. It's one thing to be a racist. It's another to like, I'm going to make sure this movie doesn't even do well at the box office to make a point. You know, yeah. So there are people who are going to watch Roseanne only because she's a Trump supporter, and because if she doesn't get good ratings, and we have a president that's all about ratings, then they're wrong somehow. Do you know what I mean? They want their side to win. Mm-hmm. So they're going to watch Roseanne. And the irony of that is these are the same people who hated her fucking guts and raked her over the coals only 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention when she's, you know, sang the national anthem. You know, she was like public enemy number one and the most disgusting liberal, and everybody hated her. And
the conservative, when her TV show was on before, the conservatives didn't really care for her very much either, because she was you know, she was anti-establishment and was like, this is what a working class family is like. And it seemed like a pretty good representation of America at the time. And so now it seems like it's it's flipped 100%.
But you have to remember, Roseanne Barr really enjoyed one episode where she explodes her home blows up literally.
Yeah,
and she said that to her was symbolic of how she thought about the success of Roseanne. So she's always wanted to blow up the show, and now she's getting a chance to do it.
I guess so. I mean, I think a big part of this is, you know, Trump's attitude about Israel and all that, because, you know, that's very important to her. But what people don't realize is, you know, like Pence and all these, you know, evangelical Christians, you know, this is all a part of, you know, making sure the apocalypse fucking happens. Exactly. No wonder these idiots don't care about the planet. They think Jesus is coming back any minute now. Who cares? Why take care of the planet, you know?
Sarah Gilbert, her daughter, Melissa Gilbert's sister and host of The Talk, she has been behind putting the show back together, and she's been very instrumental as a open lesbian in Hollywood, to not only casting herself, and I guess she's now a lesbian character on the show, but also that she has a gender nonconforming child who's going to be a major plot development in the Roseanne reboot.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see, like, you know, maybe...
Does Laverne Cox play her?
She may be a little too old for the part.
I'm curious. I'm really dying, actually, to see it, because I think it's going to be a Trojan horse, I'm hoping. But it's probably going to be very sad to see Roseanne Barr sort of, you know, devolve into this Trump apologist.
Yeah, we'll see. I agree. And like I said... Having said all that, I know what a special, loving, and to me, maternal person she is. She's kind of took me under her wing. She's very, very, you know, special. But to me, this was a deal breaker.
You used to do several gigs on the same day with Sherry Vine, and you said in one interview that you guys were going to a gig at a club called Success. And there was a sign outside the door that said, "The elevator to success is broken. You must take the stairs."
I think this was back when we were doing Telltale off Broadway. So there were days when we would wake up, get in drag, do drag brunch, like at Lips or one of these places, or I can't even remember, you know, Global 33, go to the theater, do a matinee, you know, take a little break, have a little something to eat, do the show, go home, take everything off, keep the face on and sleep, you know, for a couple hours on your back like a fucking vampire, put the drag back on and go to tunnel until 4 a.m. So, I mean, this is, you know, that's the only way to survive in New York, like not just working every day, 3 fucking jobs a day. And of course, you know, Off-Broadway doesn't pay shit, even if you're like in a hit show in, you know, a big fancy theater. So once we were in full drag after quite a day going to tunnel, and we stopped at a red light, and there was a church. And you know how they have those inspirational signs like, "God doesn't want you to do this. He wants you to beep, bop, boop." Anyway, so you change the letters. And so you did get the phrase right. It did say, the elevator to success is not working. You must take the stairs. And Sherry and I both looked at that and then looked at each other and in unison said, yeah, in heels.
But there wasn't a club called Success?
Mm-hmm. No, oh. No.
And that's kind of a reference to what it was, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. People said, you know, Fred Astaire's a great dancer. And like, well, Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did, but also backwards and in heels.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, Sherry Vine's great, but I have to do everything she does in 1-inch comfort plus pay less heels.
Have you been following the Olympics or at least, you know, Gus Kent Worthy and kissing his boyfriend on television?
Adam Rippon.
I did not see that live. I've watched some of it and I, you know, obviously I've watched a lot of the ice skating and it's so funny how it actually makes me emotional because I can't believe what people can do physically. It gives me such hope in humanity. And then you add like the fact that ice skating is physically demanding and something I could never do. And then you add to it the creativity and the shameless beauty of it. And it honestly makes me emotional. When I go see people dance, you know, like a dance show, I don't know, stuff like that really gets me. Like human creativity is what makes me emotional and gives me hope because, you know, we could just be wearing burlap sacks or leaves, but people, you know, there's only so much, so many ideas and fashion never fails to occasionally surprise me. You know, there's three, what is it called? Primary colors, you know, red, yellow, and blue, but people have been painting for thousands, you know, tens of thousands of years, and they still come up with things that you've never seen. And there's only, what, like 8 notes on a scale, and people keep writing music that you've never heard. There's 20, it just amazes me that the configuration, and I'm really fucking rambling now. Should I have not dropped acid right before?
You sound like you're on acid or something.
I know, it's
all
crazy.
All the beautiful colors.
Well,
but it's really amazing. Yeah. It's like there's 26 fucking letters in the alphabet, and there's a billion stories to tell.
Mm. And there's only so many cells in your body, and you can either look like Muhammad Ali's grandson,
or T-cells, you can look like
Jackie Beat.
Insert a T-cell joke here. No, I love that.
Have you seen what Muhammad Ali's grandson looks like?
Is he gorgeous?
Yeah, he's gorgeous. It's disgusting how
well, it reminds
he is.
Me of my favorite meme. I'm sure you saw the meme, which is Steve Bannon right next to... is it Idris Elba or Idris Elba? And it's like, you know, the guy on the left thinks he's genetically superior to the guy on the right. And it's like the most horrible looking bloated troll next to the most gorgeous fucking black man you've ever seen. But but back to the Olympics, I've been watching celebrity,
Big Brother.
Big Brother, because Ross is on it.
And I saw pictures of Ross wearing your sleeping mask with your eyeballs.
Yes! See, honey, sales went through the roof.
They did?
Literally, in like 3 days, I got like, you know, 30 orders.
That's fantastic. So 30 people watch Celebrity Big Brother. That's great.
30 people. No, there's... No, 50 people watch.
Are you liking the show? I haven't been able to catch
30
much of
people
it.
Are Ross fans. No.
What's going on between Ross and Omarosa?
They have made love several times.
Okay. Because he's a top, right?
Yes, exactly.
Sissy on the streets, butch in the sheets.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No, they... you know, they already made headlines when he sat down and talked to her about what's going on in the White House, and she was kicked out of the White House.
She was escorted out. Omarosa
saying she was dragged out.
She was dragged out of the White House. So she might.
Yeah. So she's like Trump. I don't like people that are any way the wind blows. I hate that. It's like you need to fucking have some. I mean, it's good to be flexible. It's good to listen to other people. You don't have to overreact. And then there are deal breakers. It's like, what? You're for this, this, and this? Fuck you. It's like she's a black woman. how can you turn your back on everything? You know,
that's how she feels empowered, is by turning her back on her own experience.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Who runs the Jackie Beats Eyes Facebook page before we leave
you? I have no idea. Why?
It's the weirdest Facebook. One of the weirdest Facebook pages. It's just photos of your eyes.
I think it's a fan. I mean, I really honestly don't know. And I feel bad if it's somebody I do know, or if they did at one point tell me they were going to do it and I don't remember, then I feel bad. But I don't remember. I don't know.
It's not very well developed. It's just photos of your eyes.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of people have an idea and then they don't really run with it. They just, okay.
Jackie, we look forward to seeing you.
Can I say a good example of that?
Sure.
Is a website that I came up with and actually, bought the domain, called horndogswithcorndogs.com. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, my God.
And it was going to be hot guys in their underwear, or maybe even less, eating corn dogs.
Oh, there's a...
So I have the idea, but I've never really run with it.
You could just do a Pinterest account. I have one, Hot Guys with Bales of Hay. For some reason, muscular, attractive men with bales of hay is a thing. It's a fetish on the internet. So I just started adding them to Pinterest.
Have you seen Stuck Girls?
No. What is that?
No, Stuck Girls. This is so specific. It's not even that sexual. It's girls whose cars are stuck in the mud, and they have photos of like them looking over their shoulder and then a picture of the tire stuck in mud. It's so specific.
Carstuckgirls.com.
I don't even know if it's a .com, but if you Google Stuck Girls, and then they have like a picture of their foot on the gas, and it's like, you know, girl, you're flooding the gas tank. And
yeah, there's a Reddit for stuck girls too, like girls stuck under a mattress, girls stuck on a sunroof, girls stuck, you know, on a floaty.
But my favorite fetish of all time is splashing. Don't you agree? It's covering yourself.
Beans.
Yeah, it's just so much fun.
I don't know. I like cakefarts.com.
I just find that the farts aren't realistic because they're pumping gas into their ass.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah, they put air up there for sure.
And I'm like, this is fake.
Well, if you were there and you smelled it, would it make it more real?
I'm a birther when it comes to cake farts.
The only thing worse than a fart is a fake fart.
They had to like turn a plane around and land and do an emergency landing because there was a passenger that had some rancid farts that these two guys started fighting with him. And then these other women were also stuck in the row with them too, and so they got booted out too. And they're all like, you cannot fly on this airline ever again.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jackie, you're Italian, right?
Yes.
Did you hear about the Italian family that went on the cruise in the South Pacific? You've been on drag queen cruises before, right? Well, so this family, I guess, was so rambunctious that the kids were just going around picking fights with everyone, and so people were literally like hiding in their rooms because these guys kept beating people up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my Lord.
And
the
Carnival Cruise Line has like had to issue an apology, and they're like giving people discounts, and these people, I'm sure, are banned from ever getting on the flight or on it again. And I guess they were specifically targeting Australians.
Man, drag stars at sea cruise is rough.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Those Italians know how to have fun.
Listen, they know how to do everything. Everything. They're the best at everything. Think about it. Fashion, food, opera. Yes, hello.
If you can find a nice Italian lover, it's a good thing.
I'm right here and available. Anybody?
Aw. Jackie, it's so good to talk to you. You are so nice.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry I dropped acid.
That's all right.
The colors and the notes and the...
It'll only last for about 4 more hours, and then it'll go away.
Oh, cool. I'm having a bad trip. No, seriously, some Italians are trying to beat me up. I'm having a terrible trip. that was called a callback. Mm-hmm. All right, you guys. Well, thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing you in Chicago.
Let's, Let's recap. I love RuPaul. Anyway,
I'm sorry. Yes, that you feel like you're going to spend the rest of your life sort of be like telling the public that you like RuPaul.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, we're talking about RuPaul, not Jesus Christ. I've made fun of Jesus Christ and not gotten this much flack from people. Mm. I just want to also remind people that the day after Chicago, because people all over the world can listen to this, right?
No, yes. Only people in Chicago. I'm just kidding.
Bye.
You're also Milwaukee, right?
Milwaukee on the 4th. And then we do New York after that. So people can go to MissJackieBeat.com and click on schedule and see all the upcoming shows.
Is it the feminist MS or the conventional MISS?
Oh, it's MISS.
Okay. You're a traditional woman.
It's that old
woman.
School. It's very old school, like, you know. Yeah.
Well, God bless America, Jackie Beat.
Yes, the real America. Mm-hmm.
Not the fake one.
No. No. And
thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Jackie Beat lives in Altadena, California.
Altadena?
That's right.
Where the hell is that?
That's what it says on her Facebook page. It's where LA is? It's kind of north. East a little bit.
Oh, Altadena, baby.
Altadena. It sounds like a good drag name, Altadena.
I kind of like feel like at the end of the interview, sometimes just giving the home address and phone numbers of the guests. You can call her and tell her exactly what you thought, you know, because sometimes when people listen to the podcast, they're like, I want to tell that guest a piece of my mind. Mm-hmm. But you can actually interact with Jackie on social media. She's very active on Twitter and on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Miss Jackie Beat, honey, if you're nasty. But she's coming to Chicago with Sherry Vine, and they're going to hoop it up at Hamburger Mary's here in Andersonville on Saturday, March the 3rd, correct?
That is correct.
And you can get tickets ahead of time at hamburgermarys.com/Chicago.
Ooh. Check it out. Two very classy ladies at the top of their game. See them before they die.
Yeah. You know, Jackie Beat's like, you know, I'm so old, I've been a caveman, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at her birthday and I was like, same as yours.
No.
Yes, you guys are the same age.
No, she's older than me. I'm sure she is.
Look it up.
She's lying.
Look it up, girl.
She was a teenager in the 70s. I was not a teenager in the 70s.
Well, then maybe she's actually older than she says she is on the internet. Or
maybe.
There's a time warp or something here. Because you're only like 29 years old, right?
Yeah, that's right.
On Facebook, I'm 33.
Listen, I decided a long time ago I was going to live outside of time. It's too constraining, this concept of time. We need to broaden our horizons.
As you like to say, age is just a little number you sometimes have to lie about. Ding. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. We couldn't do this podcast without your help. You can listen to past interviews with Jackie Beat only on our website, feastoffun.com/plus, where you can become a member and ensure the future of this podcast is still around for years to come.
Maybe you'd like to make a one-time donation. You can do that to support the show at feastoffun.com/donate. Or if you'd like to get a t-shirt, visit our store at feastoffun.com/store.
Where we have the correct spelling of Shantae. With an accent on the E at the end.
Très français.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.